Support for Art Talks comes from the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com. And from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from Red Band Coffee Company, local roaster, offering individually prepared coffees, New Orleans-style iced coffee, and whole bean coffee at two locations in Davenport. Information is at redbandcoffee.com.
Well, hello and welcome. You've tuned into a conversation between artists. For the next hour, we'll be exploring the mind and the creativity of our guest. This is Art Talks, and I'm your host, Bruce Carter. Well, hello again, and thanks for joining us. Mike Bales is our guest today. Mike is a lifelong Midwest resident who writes poetry about the human condition in time and place. He appreciates the beauty of rural and small-town settings. He's lived in different Iowa cities and in the countryside, and has spent time on his uncle's farms in Minnesota. Threshold has just been released, and it's his first book of poetry published by RWG, the Rockford Writers Guild Press. Many places hold special meanings for him, and in these places, many memories arrive. He's a widely published poet, a short story writer. His poetry credits include the Rockford Review, Lyric Iowa, Out Loud Anthology, and Coffee Ground Breakfast. He is the host of monthly Out Loud poetry and prose readings at the Midwest Writing Center, and he's very active in the Quad City writing community. And Mike Bales, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Bill Gustafson did the cover. I'm going to do a shout-out for Bill. He's a marvelous drawer. Excellent drawing on the cover for that. That was a neat thing to get him on it. And this is your first book of poetry. This is
right.
This is a landmark for you, and hopefully many more to come.
The attention's been great. There's one level of getting in magazines and doing readings. For me, the excitement about this book and the promotions and the attention I've gotten has been a totally different level. And to promote a book, I think you have to take everything up to a higher level.
True. How did this all get started for you? How did you arrive at a poetry? Did poetry choose you? How did that work for you?
Well, basically, it's me. In fifth grade, in a parochial grade school, a nun, who's the English instructor, had us write two poems. And I mean, one poem. I got excited and wrote two. They didn't make the blackboard. There's the really nice part of me and the kind of rebellious thing, and there are things to kind of be upset about. And my very first poem was something called Not a Jackass for Me. That didn't make the bulletin board, but it was fun to do. I discovered it was fun when she had us do those two poems for an assignment.
You got applause for the poems then?
I don't know. We didn't share them that much. I have, even in grade school, I got some attentions where some guy gasped about some essay I wrote, where it's actually John Lennon's guitar talking, and he went, wow, that would be around the time of the Beatles' White Album.
I remember that time. You wrote words hard to come out of you, or words were easy to say, easy to write?
I think back in high school, I knew it was part of me. I think sometimes I'd have some phrase, and it'd be longing for some line, and it'd be longing for other lines to go with it. And sometimes I didn't always come up with the lines to come up with the other one, but I knew that was a great line. And that, and I think different rhythms are playing through my head, which I'm not good with formal meter, but lines and different rhythms are going through my head, and I think that was the start of it. And I knew there's something there, even if I couldn't get something to go with that one line, which I felt was great. It came easier years after.
The line would just appear to you?
It's all in my head. You know, like if I'm doing a short story, there'd be a line that jumps up out of me, or it's some kind of voice or whatever, or it's some kind of weird reaction to something or trying to make sense of something. That'd be my best guess as to the start of something that I do, even back then.
Daily life, daily occurrences, odd occurrences, what triggers that?
Well, now it's life. Way back then, it could have been causes like my, quote, revolutionary stuff. I was wrote under the name Jay Anon and be like, peaceful revolution or whatever that was caused. I just thought, geez, there ought to be peace. I mean, seeing all the stuff about the Vietnam War or hearing all the idealism I heard in different songs, I had to say something. So then it was more idealistic. Now, I hope more I'm just kind of reacting to life, you know, now as opposed to back then.
How do you mean, reacting to life?
Well, if I meet someone nice and, you know, write something about her, or places in Iowa that I just love, that would be just fantastic, where I've got to say something about it. I still think it's good to talk about the causes too. I just more talk about places that I think are really good, and there are some really good places. I'd like to kind of say that.
Are you recording those places, or are you trying to capture them? How do you react to it?
It comes to me. I think a poem in a way is like a stew that simmers. Some of the things that I might write about now have been simmered for years. I don't have it with me, but I know one poem I wrote about Split Rock Lighthouse. I was in grade school in Minnesota, and that tiny lighthouse on this huge cliff above Lake Superior, I had to say something about it. I did it in a poetry class, creative writing class in high school at Assumption, and I didn't feel it's quite right. Then years later, I got it more right, and it ended up being a poem of mine that was published in a local magazine called The Oak. Very nice person, Betty Mowry, puts it out. So, you know, sometimes it can be years of simmering.
Huh, interesting. Do you keep a notebook with you? Do you carry something around?
I used to journal in the morning. I'm not now because I'm living in different places. My situation's a little bit up in the air. But Gloria Iaccarino said, back in 97, I hung out with her, and she had a nice studio in the Village of East Davenport. She said, always do a journalist, so I did. And I know one of my essays that was published in the Rock Review, usually it's short stories, but I had been wanting to say do a Father's Day thing, and I felt my dad was watching me while I was watching one of Glory's daughters, keep an eye on her. And I, for months, thought, geez, I ought to do a Father's Day thing. My dad had been gone, you know, a number of years, and I thought it'd be nice. And I just woke up this morning, one morning, and rough drafted this essay that ended up being published. So it was always a morning thing, the journal kind of thing.
Do you record little vignettes? Do you record little views or experiences, or do you overhear conversations and write them down?
I ought to. Betty Mowry recommended that. Basically, in the morning, I can carry on. You know, there's someone I really like. This is getting kind of personal. Then I'd be writing that in the journals. Dreams. Really, if you're being serious about dreams, you ought to do a separate journal for dreams. There are different reasons for that, so it isn't mixed up with other things. But it'd be things like that that I wrote down. I don't really carry like a small pocketbook with you that you really should, you know, in tight jeans, but that'd be a good thing to do too.
You're always on the lookout for experiences?
I don't know if I have to. I always want to write a good poem. I always want to write a good short story. So there's that desire. When it comes to writing, I think some people mention it. I think sometimes when you're taking in your life, you're like a sponge taking it in. I don't know if I even have to try, but there are things that just catch me and things I'm preoccupied with. Then when you write, it's like you're squeezing the sponge out.
Nice, interesting. So you don't necessarily respond to everything in life. There's a certain editing going on, and certain things really resonate with you more than others.
There are lines to me in different images that create short stories, and I think the ones that come out to me are probably more urgent than the other things. Like, I don't think it'd be too urgent for me to write a poem saying, I went to the water fountain, unless it happened to mean something.
Are you looking for meaning in your work? Are you looking to connect with the audience?
I'd like, if I was writing about a waterfall, even maybe for it to be about something or something about life, rather than just the waterfall. I might be a great nature writer, but I think it'd have to be how nature struck me, what it meant about life, you know, the losses, parents dying, fellow writers dying, that. I think one of my things would be, you know, what does it have to do with life or death? Is this waterfall living and dying? That kind of thing.
So you automatically go symbolic?
I'd like to, and I think some people pressed me a little bit to do a little bit more of the metaphor, especially with short stories and fiction. And fiction can be, the metaphor's there, it's just a little bit more expanding. With poetry, it's more, and it's maybe harder for a reader to see. In poetry, it's more compressed, so reader will go down instantly and say, well, that's the metaphor.
Yeah, compact.
Right.
Compact and squeezed. Huh. I noticed in your writing in this book, Threshold, that you use very few adjectives. You really don't describe things very, very widely. You just name things.
Right. And that's one rule of writing. It might not necessarily be true for poetry. Find the exact word, like, it's this kind of blue. No, it's aqua. He's not angry. He's livid. That kind of thing. But there are some poets that do it pretty well, giving respect to other styles, who have the different adjectives and different things and flesh out a poem that way. That's not my bias, but that can be a good form too.
Interesting. Well, Mike Bales, let's read one of yours. Do you want to start at the back of the book and do the 1st of October?
Absolutely. This took 10th place. Well, this is in the top 10 finalists for Love Poetry Contest at the Bettendorf Library. And it's about a special person I knew for a little while. And Writer's Studio actually gave me some critiques to help me get it to the stage this is in. 1st of October. Dave's grown shorter call to me, and the slant of light hides dreams and stars, while outside my window leaves turn colors in a moment of brilliance before they fall. This is the rhythm of seasons, when night's chill leads to migration south, the plaintive call of Canadian geese, shifting in and out of their formations, going to another land. This is a time when I let go of summer, but hold on to memories of youthful callings, the basking of endless days, to gather and play, to swim in lakes and ponds, and take in light until I can swim no more. In a moment of silence, youthful dreams linger, when days grown shorter call to me. This is the rhythm of seasons, to let go, but remember. In this time of passage, this is what I know.
Nice. And how cool that you have the wisdom to understand that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It was written, I think, in the 1st of October, and I wanted it at the end to kind of summarize all the other poems, you know, to experience things, but you're going to have to let go. So that's why I put it at the end. I felt it was a good summary of this book.
What do you remember? What do you let go of? How do you decide that?
Well, there have been people I've really cared about who are gone, but are still part of me. A little bit of loss, and I've been through it, is these people are still part of me. I'm not going to reject this good presence. So there's some people really, really great who are living inside me are good presence, and you don't reject that presence. It's just that they're not with me now, and physically I'm seeing other people. And it's all a matter of perspective, like losses. And I heard this is actually kind of part of a Native American philosophy that I heard, that you don't need to be totally afraid of death. You don't need to totally be afraid of people dying. They're going to be a part of you. They're going to live with you. And I think that's the best way to approach it. Otherwise, some losses or accumulation losses are a little bit too sad to take.
Mm-hmm.
Take the good part of it.
Mm-hmm. Do you edit your memories? Do you throw things out? Do you keep other things?
I like to have access to everything. You know, I think it's a good way of living. I've lost some things, you know, I've gained some things, but hopefully in the end it'd be all good. And to edit things too much, I think it's cutting you too much off from life, mm-hmm. which isn't necessarily good for your living.
Mm-hmm. Do you edit your work? Do you rewrite it?
A lot of times, not too much, but, you know, run by a line and it'll jump out, well, this word isn't working, this word isn't working. It'd be a little bit more for the short stories, where sometimes maybe I'm a little bit too afraid of being too complacent. I mean, anyone can love their first draft and say, oh, this is absolutely brilliant. But short stories, sometimes I'll do it and I'll erase the memory and just totally redo it by hand. So I'm not as complacent about it and maybe catch more revisions in that than if I didn't erase the memory and redo it by hand. But, you know, I'd have the old printed text in front of me. So, you know, the thing is in front of me.
David Collins, years and years ago when he was here, when he was still alive, brought in a book, and he was reading from the book. And in the book, in pencil, he had crossed out a word and written another word. And I thought, I said to him, you just never stop rewriting, do you? And he said, no. He said, that because you're a different person looking at this piece that you've made, and you have a different reaction, or a better word will come to you. That happens to you too?
Right. Now, for short stories, I think some people are picky or even like torture themselves over it. Sometimes I could change them a little bit while I'm reading, and maybe I would make a slight change. When I'm doing a public reading, though, too much, I don't change it. I think this is it. This is the work. You know, a thing can be different. Like, I used to write short stories, first person, present tense figure is very powerful, very present. Now I tend not to write third person in the past. This one short story, I'm going to read it sometime, but it's first person and present. I'll read it that way because that's the way it is, but I know part of me could easily do it, you know, make it past. Which may be some reason I'd want to write in past for a little bit more depth or that kind of thing anyway.
A memory, reliving something.
Right.
Very interesting. Very interesting. You feel as if you're a poet. This is something that is part of you. You've mentioned that twice.
More part of me than a lot of things. Us writers work because we have to. If you get down to it, it's a writer's... I'm a writer at heart. That's me. The other things are part of me too, you know, and hopefully add to the depth of my life and the depth of my writing. And I think David Collins put it very well. I did take a course of his once at ComU, and, you know, I did hear him speak when he was like the dinner host for the dinners after the Mississippi Valley Writers Conference in the 90s. But he pretty much said that writing's a preoccupation. It's almost like you're going to dress. I'm a writer. You're going to have lines go through you when you're taking a shower in the morning. You're going to have lines go through you. You're going to be thinking about something when you're driving to work. Maybe even at work, you're thinking about drifting thoughts come into your mind about maybe something you're going to write. Because I know once when I had this second shift job, I'd like work in a short story, work in a novel. I do have novels I've worked on. And I'd be doing revisions at work. Then I was doing work, and it's the kind of physical job where I didn't always have to think about the work. Then at work, it comes something. Oh, I've got to change this. Then I write something down, a scrap of paper, then go back and change it. That was very much a preoccupation.
So you can't help it then?
It's part of me. It's probably the biggest part of me in my life.
Lucky. It's a blessing, I think, and also a curse. It's a burden, and it's also a joy. Mike Bales is our guest. He's a poet. He's always been one, a lifelong Midwest resident, and we're talking about his brand-new book called Threshold, with cover by Bill Gustafson. Time for a short break. Let's take one now, and we'll be right back after this gallery guide.
On exhibit around the WVIK listening area at the Cattage Gallery in the Galvin Fine Arts Center on the St. Ambrose University campus in Davenport through September 5th, the 10th annual Cattage Exhibition. Hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. In the Figge Art Museum at 225 West 2nd Street in Davenport through September 7th, Innovators and Legends, Generations in Textiles and Fiber, and Local Threads. Hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Thursdays. At Midcoast at Center Station on River Drive in Moline through the end of July, Acrylics by Susan Moore. Hours are 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday. At Midcoast Gallery West on 2nd Avenue in Rock Island through the end of June, text is a four-letter word, with works by Steve Banks, Heidi Hernandez, and Terry Rathje. Hours are 11:30 to 5:30 Wednesday through Saturday. At Quad City Arts Gallery at 1715 2nd Avenue in Rock Island, through July 3rd, pastels by Diane Bruce, watercolors by Carlene Dingman Atwater, and a visual journey with oil pastels by B.J. Grimmer. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 5, Saturday 11 to 5. At Quad City Arts at the airport in the Moline International Airport, through the end of June, mixed media sculptures by Matthew Moyer, black and white photography by Marvin L. Thompson, and assemblage by Wayne Bertola. At the Quad City Botanical Center at 2525 4th Avenue in Rock Island through the end of June, works by Pamela Onimus. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area.
Mike Bayles, B-A-Y-L-E-S, whose new book, Threshold, a book of poetry, copyrighted 2013, marvelous stuff, spare descriptions of the human condition in time and place. Mike, your process, so we've kind of touched briefly on it in various ways, but how does... Can you walk us through the creation of a poem in general terms? It's like you have an idea, words comes to you, you write it down. You write it out longhand on a yellow legal pad. You have little scraps of paper tucked away in all your drawers. How does it work for you?
In a way, I can say all of the above. My favorite way is to write in a computer. And as I liked what I think is some fiction writer said or something where they just like the feeling of the words going through their fingers into the keyboard. But if some idea comes to me and I'm away from a computer, I've got to get it down and I'll do on paper. The computer will obviously be the final process of it because that's how I get it on paper. And I do at some point want those words and those letters to go through my fingers. I liked the way that one author described the process that way. I think it's a neat way to feel it.
As opposed to writing it out in pencil?
I'd rather do it during computer. I don't know why. I just hooked on it from that person. And it's kind of a finished product there. That's one trouble with sometimes first drafts being on computer. I think some people, because it looks so good, and it might look so good that you kind of miss some revisions, but I still like that as a process, doing it through the computer.
My pattern for writing was to write it out longhand, cross it out, grab lines, have arrows pointing, you know, taking whole blocks and scooting them around. And then after all that was done, of taking it and then printing it all out on a computer nice and clean from all those scribbles and all those revisions, and then take it from there. It's like that's like the moon rocket gets you into orbit, and then you go on from there. You work a little differently.
I can see what you say. I like it to look neat, you know, I like the, you know, as I described before, but I think it'd be argued that way, you know, if you're scribbling it all around, it's clearly signaling to you that this is a first draft. I think Max Mostyn said, feel free to move lines around, feel free to do that. And I think it's something all of us could do more. So, you know, I can see that too. I just haven't tended to do it that way.
Mm-hmm. When do you finish editing then? When do you finish writing?
Well, you know, some people might, you can always revise something, but if I go, oh, this is right, that's kind of it. I usually don't spend a lot of time on a lot of poems. Some might come a little difficult and be over a period of a few days. Otherwise, it can be a 40-minute setting. It depends on whether I feel this is right, you know, whether this has come to me right, or whether it's something that I'm really struggling and isn't coming too well, which some people maybe say that your best works come from the things you struggle at. I'm not sure. You know, I think sometimes it can, and I don't think everything you say ought to be easy to say if you're going to really get in yourself. But then there's the other thing that sometimes I'm going to struggle with that just don't plain work out, but it's worth the effort to see, you know, if that idea is going to lead anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And very often the one you struggle with, the one immediately after that just flows right out, and you hardly even have to change it at all.
Well, for me, there are things that come more easily and things that don't. And I think you've got to write. I think I told people, Quincy poets, don't worry if you write a poem that bombs, it could lead to something else that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all an experience. If something isn't working, you're at least engaging the craft, you're at least going through a writing exercise, you're at least doing something, and who knows what else it's going to lead to.
Mm-hmm. Are you surprised by your writing?
Sometimes. From the days way back in 93 to the days now, sometimes it's a struggle, and sometimes I'm each time, even though I've been at it for years, when I get something out, I'm still thrilled at cranking out something that's pretty good. I don't think you necessarily know when you start a piece.
Yeah, how it's going to turn out. Yeah. Have you found your voice, your poetic voice?
I think it's evolving. Voice is kind of a hard thing to do because I think it's kind of an unconscious thing and it's part of you. To really be conscious, it's kind of hard for me to describe. I think it's evolving. I think I've learned from other people. Like in the past year, I've gone more to narrative poems, which you aren't necessarily going to see a lot in Threshold, but it's nice to go back to some of the other forms. And the only thing I think if a poem's working in that is I can read it and it kind of feels like it's me, it's part of me. Other than that, to consciously try to develop a voice, I don't think you can, but I think the more and more you write, the more and more the poems or the short stories or whatever feel I could say, and it's me.
Interesting. Are you discovering something about yourself in the writing of them?
For me, it's good to bring back things that I've been through, you know, gains and losses, and I think sometimes to feel whole, it's good to bring back things in the past. Maybe in doing this, some of the poems, like in Central Iowa and that, and to go through it, it's a reminder, a discovery, how much I really did love things in Iowa. I've been staying here and there in Illinois, and I've been to Iowa some, just to realize how much I love these things, to maybe realize that these things are still very much a part of me, which is surprising, because I think all of us want to move on with our current lives, but to go back and realize that these things really are a big part of me. Mm-hmm. And that'd be a little bit of the surprise.
Mm-hmm. Is this a kind of a recording of a spiritual journey for you?
My spiritual beliefs are pretty loose, but and sometimes consciously I won't say a lot about organized religion per se, but I've discovered in some things that I write that it's spirit. You know, it's kind of a spirit of this, spirit of the land. Spirit of maybe some poems remind me of some people that are very special, and there's a spirit in that.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, let's read some more. How about Days Between Days, page 12?
I'm thrilled. That's definitely a poem of changes for me, a bittersweet poem.
Hmm.
Day Between Days. The day between quests came bittersweet. Sweet memories of the past calling me back. Bitter realities driving me forward, knowing yet not knowing what was left to face. It was the people lost, shared ventures and pain, but when wasn't there pain at every junction of life? Everyday tasks soothed when given time to reflect. Defrosting my freezer disrupted my apartment, and I left to search for another vision. I took photos of a nearby river and talked with strangers to find another part of me. When something inside was dying and something inside stirred, an unknown essence, when I took pause for a moment, sweet, sad, and joyful at once.
Nice. I love that last paragraph. It's almost as if the poem went beyond you and you were just kind of holding on to the tail of it as it was coursing through the page. There's that wonderful where you get out of the way of the poem. Do you know what I mean?
I think
it passes through
I think of it more for like fiction where you don't have the narrator or the writer get in the way of the story.
Uh-huh. But with a poem, you are there?
I don't totally know. I've got to thank like a social worker instructor, a psychology instructor for that last line. Someone who said in a class, you can feel more things at once. I've got to do that. That's basically the experience and basically a time of, I was through something very nice, but it was very temporary. And the day was kind of funny to me. I know I'm not exactly answering your question. That I'd been through something nice, and it was really sad that I wasn't through it. It was a really nice temporary job, but it's just for a month. And I did feel really good about it, but it was over. And that day, actually, I didn't want to write. I wanted to do something, because I write all the time. I wanted to do something totally different. So I took this camera, a little pocket Instamatic, no less, and just went to Long Grove and took pictures by the Wabsee.
Hmm.
That isn't exactly an answer to your question, but that's kind of my reaction to the poem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And other people say more like they're messages and carried messages. I usually don't go that far, but I'm sure there are things that come through me.
Mm-hmm. I find that an artist is sometimes the last person to know what's happening in a piece or what they're expressing or what is coming through them. I really think that there you reach a stage where the work just passes through you, that you are in a sense a radio receiver taking dictation on the phone.
It could be. There are different people who hear readings or that tell me meaning, saying, I think it means this, or I saw this, and I went, I didn't think of that. It could be, thanks for telling me. That's kind of a different spin in my bit than, what I consciously tried to do.
Uh-huh, yeah. Let's read one more, The Gathering, page 26. Mike Bales is our guest, a poet. This is his first book of poetry called Threshold.
Okay. I'm glad to read this. This comes down to some Des Moines memories again.
Mm-hmm.
The Gathering. The sun beats down on you as you gather water in distant light of the golden dome of the state capitol. Each day you bear the weight alone of your sick child, your old man's gone, and you're a child yourself left in this part of town. Neighbors gathered at the cistern while as a nearby passerby stirs a cloud of dust, with only a pause when the driver shakes his head. You close your eyes and dream, the golden dream, for a moment yours. You open your eyes to see he's gone and look around to see your fate. Although I've never seen your face, I've driven your roads when young. I try to imagine the life you lead when left in what others call the wrong side of town.
What's going on there?
It came from some of my fun bumming around Central Iowa, Ames, Des Moines. And to go down to Des Moines, I was almost expanding my experience in Ames. There's a instructor in the social problems course, a sociology course at Iowa State, who said there's actually a part of Des Moines, I believed him, where there's no running water they couldn't afford to have it put in, and it is near the what was then called the Sec Taylor Stadium. And it's a fun outing. You know, it's like a Friday night, Friday afternoon off, and I could go down to Des Moines for an absolute thrill. I drove that area. I had a small Vega, the funny thing was, and there's a pothole in this road so big that I figured if I would have spaced out, my car would have gone right into it. And I never did find the cistern, but it was kind of poor, right by the stadium. And if you looked far enough, you saw the state, Golden State Capitol Dome.
And the gathering, who was gathering?
I'm not sure where that title came from.
Gathering thoughts, gathering
ideas? I never thought about it, but I imagine it'd be people gathering around
the cistern.
That'd be the main thing.
Uh-huh.
Like it was a central social point where people would go because they had to get water. You know, I believe that there was actually a cistern there that I didn't find. And another meaning I kind of like about it is maybe people have to gather around her to help her. I don't think that was my intent when writing the poem, but I like to think that people would gather around that woman and help her. Very young herself.
Mm-hmm. Why did you notice that?
That's what I saw. I heard it from a social problems thing, and I was very much cause-oriented. I thought, you know, I was studying like the concentric circles of poetry, and if really in the middle of the center, it's harder to get out because you lack the money, you lack the education, you lack the means, and the poorer you are, the harder it is to break out. And was something that really touched me in the class, and it was, you know, the down and out, really, how can they break out? You know, are they going to be stuck the rest of their lives at a cistern when, you know, the rest of town, you know, has plumbing and all the other developments? And how do you break out of that?
Good. Why are you so interested in that?
Well, I've at times gotten help, and I didn't realize I cared about these much people. I went to college, you know, as a writer, but what was I going to do for a job? And I was really this lost soul. I got help, and I really jumped in with this one group, and this one guy kind of seemed, and I really jumped into helping him, and they said, you really care about him? And I had also taken intro to sociology, intro to psychology, and those things really clicked for me. I thought, wow, I've got a mission. And that became the big cause. And shortly after college, I did do some social services work. It's like it's last soul, and all of a sudden I had this big cause.
You're a social activist?
I was involved in different causes, and I was involved in different social services thing, like child welfare, that. I did 2 years of hotline work. 1 year in Ames, my last year in Ames before I transferred to UNI, then 1 year in UNI, Cedar Falls. Two different hotlines, two different kind of things. One was a lot more difficult calls than the other one, but is good old helping me in discovering that I could do it.
Good for you. We can do lots of things. Well, Mike Bales is our guest. We're talking poetry. We're talking the human condition in time and place. From his new book called Threshold, Mike Bales, a cover by Bill Gustafson, our friend. Time for another break. Let's take one, and we'll be right back after this gallery guide.
Exhibit around the WVIK listening area. At the Renee Gray Gallery at 101 South Cody Road in LeClaire, on continuing exhibit, Scored and Surfaced, works in various media by 9 artists. Hours are 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day except Sunday. At Rostock's at 2108 3rd Avenue in Rock Island, on continuing exhibit, Object Permanence, works by 20 local artists. Hours are 11 a.m. to 1 a.m., Tuesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. on Sunday. At the German-American Heritage Center at 712 West 2nd Street in Davenport, through July 28th, The World of Berta Hummel. Hours are 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., Tuesday through Saturday, noon to 4 on Sunday. At the Bucktown Center for the Arts on the Square in Monmouth through June 28th, Art from the Heartland Competition. Hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, Saturdays 10 to 2. At the Dubuque Museum of Art at 701 Locust Street in Dubuque through July 13th, Marcia Wegman, Midwest Landscapes. Through August 3rd, from the Permanent Collection, Ilse Sildemans Holzer. Through September 1st, Edward S. Curtis and Thomas Moran. And on continuing exhibit, the Grant Wood Gallery. Hours are Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Thursdays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. At the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art at 410 3rd Avenue in Cedar Rapids through September 7th, Carl Van Vechten, photographer to the stars. Through November 2nd, Marvin Cohn, On My Mind, The Ceramics of Dean Schwartz. And on continuing exhibit, Art in Roman Life, Grant Wood in Focus, and Maurizio Lazansky, Master Printmaker. Hours are Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 4, Thursdays 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., Sundays noon to 4. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area.
With Mike Bales, poet. This program and many, many previous programs going back about 2 years are available on our website, wvik.org. Click on the schedule button at the top of the page, scroll on down to Art Talks on Thursday nights at 7 p.m., and they'll appear. Click on that, and they'll appear a date, name of the artist, and a brief description of what they do, and Mike will probably call you poet. We were talking about your process, and we were talking about how you look back in experience and how you remember and how you keep memories and how this adds to the richness of your life and how you look upon them. And it's almost as if the memories are layered. You are writing a little bit, and then you write another little bit, and it's like it's another memory next to, but also kind of on top of the memories. And it's like you're making this delicious layered cake or the sandwich. Can you talk about that?
I'd be glad to. I kind of view it as layering music. You've got the acoustic guitar, then you've got the violins, like Sgt. Pepper or Abbey Road. Then you've got the brass, this kind of thing, drums somewhere in there. I think life's that way. I've got all these experiences that were just wonderful. They're gone now, except that they live inside of me. And I've got new experiences. I'm a guy who's got a bachelor's degree in sociology. Some of my jobs have used a degree, some don't. But I'm always glad that I went to college because it gives me new ways of looking things. I had my ups and downs living in a fraternity, but my life in Ames is wonderful, and I still live that. One thing about driving, like taking the back roads from Des Moines, Ames to Des Moines, is I'd go by all these farm fields and pass these small towns like Madrid with its grain elevator. And I think all the time I was doing that, I was remembering my uncle's small farms in Minnesota. That meant a lot, but in a way, as reliving it in Iowa by going through these farms. And I think part of my life is living it, and part of my life is reliving these things from the past, which I don't know is totally good, except I enjoy doing it. So that's layering. And I think, obviously, now if I walk through a farm, it's different than when I was walking through farm as a grade school kid. So I don't know how that's layering, except I have the memory and, you know, I have my life now. And
nice.
I can look at things in a more sophisticated eye now than maybe when I was a kid. But the kid, you've got the kind of wonder. And I think going into a situation not knowing is good, because kind of that wonder and just the discovery. So.
Nice. Images recollected in tranquility.
Right.
You're remembering, you must have a good memory.
I hope so. A friend put me up for a couple weeks, and it's kind of friendship fallen by the wayside, but at one time it was great, and I remembered all these crazy things, and he said, I didn't remember that. Well, I did, you know. It was a lot at the time, high school into, actually met him grade school, then high school into college, friend, then years after, then it just kind of falling out, figured it wasn't kind of working for me anymore the way I wanted to, but it was great at the time. And, you know, those always mean a lot, even if I've moved on.
Do you remember in photographs, or do you remember in feelings? Do you remember in kind of videos?
I like to say that things I remember that I kind of replay in my mind. I imagine I picture stuff more happening, you know, like a tape replay there, like an old videotape play, than specific quotes. I probably remember a few things too. It's just that kind of memory, like replaying tapes. And I think sometimes I really get into the memory. It stirs the same old good old feelings of how great it was back then.
Yeah. It's hard not to want to spend too much time in memory, though. But if memory is your source material, then, or part of your source material, then it's your job to stay there.
Right. Yeah, I think a lot happened for me days past. Sometimes I'm doing that, and someone's saying, what about now? And I said, I don't know. The biggest current thing is I really do love the Quad Cities. I lost my apartment, and I've been in Geneseo for a year. I moved back. Mostly, I stayed in LeClaire a little bit too, but I moved back. And the good thing about Geneseo is so much better than this time when I stayed there before. It was a whole new thing, you know, it was a new town. I do have a book, most poems written mostly out of Geneseo, which I'm waiting for cover art for that. But then it was living, you know, this is new, you know, this is a park now, this is it. I was living in a house, someone's putting me up there in a dog, and that was like new. And I was, I guess in that case, I was going, how much better it is then than the time before.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit of a new thing.
Yeah. Mike, very interesting. Can you talk about the publishing aspect of books and poets? Is it difficult to get a work published? Do you have to find an agent? Do you have to do knocking on doors? Do you have to send it in?
For the regular publishing route, it is very difficult. I've been published in different literary magazines. As for the book, with my novels, I've done the route, pitched an agent. He didn't quite buy it. The publisher I pitched to is more interested, but he didn't quite, said he wasn't quite equipped for a novel that size. And it wasn't that long, that big, but he wasn't that equipped. And for this, it's essentially self-published, even though it's under the banner of RWG Press. What it meant is that I sent them the money. They paid, they did the books. I sell the books to the profit. I'm the one who promoted it. Even if you're published through traditional means, you're going to have to be the one who promoted it. If I told, it was kind of interesting. I said, oh, do this for a change. And they said, no, no, we're not going to do a change. So if I changed, there are different poems, I changed in that. And I had to do it physically, you know, in the memory and that. And I had to do it because they said under this, I had the editorial control and they couldn't do any changes I told them to. I had to do the changes. which I think is good for the editorial control. I think the other means are good too, working with someone to agent, publish and all that to improve your pieces. But this is good, you know, I did have someone go over the poems. I have had suggestions I react to them. I'm kind of the final arbitrator.
In lieu of an editor, then you have other,
right. Yeah. I do believe any piece ought to be edited. I ran this by someone, and I thought this has to get beyond my ego, and there's some poems I definitely wanted in. Threshold, the poem Threshold in Stone Dance Hall, I definitely wanted in is poems 1 and 2. You know, there's some poems I definitely wanted in, and there's a batch of other ones, and left it past my ego saying, well, you know, which of these am I taking in addition to these, you know, for another viewpoint as to what should go in and what didn't. In the process, I got some suggested for some things to revise. And one poem I was dying to get in there. I couldn't quite get it to work to be in here. The deadline to get this out, which is fine. You know, we have the great poems here then, rather than one poem that's kind of a clunker and maybe it's going to work
better
for
not.
Other people.
Let's look at Stone Dance Hall, page 2.
Okay. This meant a lot, and Maquoketa was a great, I knew someone special from Maquoketa. Maquoketa is this great place where we'd go for like field trips in grade school. So this Stone Dance Hall. Soil and rock yield to water and time to form a great cavern. Overhead lights illuminate the floor, but shadows dance in the walls. Stone faces whisper in the still cave, and a stream flows from the cave's beginning to its end, like time itself. I listen for ageless secrets. Forces whisper them to me, using words soft as a woman, offering subtle truths. I want to dance in the underground splendor, as big band music plays in my mind. Shadows entwined speak romance, an ageless language but still true, as my life dances with life as old as time.
You're a time traveler.
I watch some of Doctor Who. I suppose I am when I'm hooked on all these memories of the past, though, and when I kind of carry on about all these things in the past. And if I really get into a piece, I can feel I'm there again.
Yeah. Let's do one more. After Tillage, 21.
Okay. Talking about time travel, that's back to freshman year in college, walking through this section of the Iowa State University Library.
Speaking with Mike Bales.
After Tillage, to the right, men design bridges while examining references and pore over old blueprints left in a studio setting. To the left, chemists run trials with test tubes and urns at hand while hoping measurements made yield the promise of discovery. The dynamo in the middle dominates and generates power for countryside, spreads energy across the grid to those living in a rural land. Panels speak of hard work and labor, the promise of rewards sought in many ways by those who left their homesteads. Students from farms and cities pass a Grant Wood mural in a university hall, pursuing visions of their creation.
Nice. And that you pass by that Grant Wood mural frequently?
Many times. I'd go up a lot of times between classes to go to the second floor, which is a periodical room. And the second floor, all in stone, and that was great. And go through the Des Moines Register, but I could get about any small-town Iowa paper that I wanted. That, read journals, and when I was getting into psychology classes or social work classes, grab the good old psychology journals, the social work journals. But there's anything, and I think the thought there is that people there from all over Iowa, actually from Iowa State University, people from all over the world, and it's like small town to the world, that kind of thing.
Nice. Huh. You relive your college experiences a lot? You still identify with them?
Very much. Maybe a little bit too much, but the key thing about that is I moved out of home, and that was the time when I was becoming me in Ames, and it wasn't always easy living with 40 people, going from parents being only kid to a fraternity of 40 people, which wasn't always easy, and I wouldn't do it again. But then to the university, where I knew people from all over the world. This one girl I dated in freshman year, she's from Olwine, and I'd been up there. That's kind of neat, small little Iowa town, to neat people I knew, like from Marengo, people all over for Iowa. Freshman year, I had a great friend from, I'm trying to think of where, somewhere in Africa or whatever. He's one of the most thoughtful people I ever met. I knew junior year, so I knew a wild guy from Argentina, I think. It's just really expanding from, well, small town. Obviously, when I travel around Iowa, I'm connect or meet people from small towns, I'm more connected than just living in Davenport, but just this big connection of all these other worlds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all these lines going out to right. all these places. And then you got to see the Grant Wood mural. I've seen pictures of that. How marvelous, right?
I liked it. I don't think I knew much about Grant Wood. The detail is great. The colors are great. Life depicted in three panels.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think of the time I realized how great he was. I don't think I realized that till after college. I mean, I did learn to follow art and paintings and that, I think, when I was in Cedar Falls. So, you know, it was a little bit after I saw the Grant Wood mural, and years after that I learned to follow art paintings more than, you know, that freshman year is kind of a nice thing. And I figured, well, this good at Iowa. This is part of this wonderful university. This is part of, you know, all these buildings and all these things that I just loved, you know, and I was bumming around, you know, becoming myself and taking all these courses.
Nice. And your consciousness expands, your experience expands, your contacts expand.
Right.
All that stuff just grows bigger and bigger. You're kind of a reader of people, aren't you?
I think that's probably what helped me being the helping person I am. I've always rated high, I think, in these empathetic scales, which I think I needed for hotlines where you aren't giving people advice. You're mostly hearing them out. Later on, a little advice might come. And I think that's what some people knew. I think it was fascinating. Like one time I was in a reference room in the basement of the Iowa State Library, and I was looking down at my table, and I looked across the table, and there's someone with a stone in the middle of her head, obviously from India. And the idea of meeting people like that. And when, you know, I was with my own crew at Assumption, you know, we are all in the crew, then, you know, I met all kinds of different people after Assumption.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Mike, our hour has just flown right by. It's time for the last question, which would be, what advice do you have as a poet, as a socially conscious person, for young writers?
What came to me, what I thought about it, and what I've gone through a little bit myself is write, you know, always write. Read as many different writers as you can. If you have a voice, it's fine. It'd also be interesting to maybe evolve your voice. Maybe also write in ways you're not totally comfortable with to see how you grow, so you're not always writing the same old thing. Allow it to evolve, and that would be the main thing I can kind of think of.
Well said. Well, Mike Boyles, your new book, Threshold, available everywhere?
Well, it can be ordered through me through the address back here, P.O. Box 2129, Davenport, Iowa, 5289-2129, and it's $12, which includes shipping.
Excellent.
And a great little book about Iowa.
Excellent. Excellent. Mike Boyles, thank you very much. That's it for us today on Art Talks. Many thanks to our guests. Many thanks to our audio engineer, that maestro of sound, Dave Garner. As always, I'm Bruce Carter. Until next week, have a great night and a fine tomorrow. See you soon, Laura.
Support for Art Talks comes from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com.